I'm Tara, and welcome to Sagas and Sass Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. This is Episode 85, continuing our coverage of Lightbringer, the sixth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga.
I'm fellow Sagas and Sass host Jonathan. This episode is titled Gorgons in the Grass, and we'll be discussing Lysandre's POV through Chapter 64 in Tempest, Part 3 of Lightbringer.
And I'm the long-missing host, Nick. Here to remind you that our Red Rising coverage is spoiler-free outside of the chapters we cover in each episode. That said, don't forget that the opinions are those of us as individuals and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the show as a whole. Though, let's be real, usually we're all on the same page, or very close to it.
Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon. With 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month, it offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. And now, this episode title is one of the ones I am most proud of from our Lightbringer coverage. So let's get into Gorgons in the Grass.
3.5 weeks into their journey to the Rim, Diomedes pays Lysandre a special honor by inviting him to the Bridge of the Dustmaker. It turns out that Helios is elsewhere, running dark, leaving Diomedes to wear the god glove and control the ship. After watching Diomedes and his men fight a virtual battle, Lysandre is invited to dinner as well, where he finally receives updates on what Helios has been up to, as well as exchanging stories of his past being haunted by the Goblin of Mars for Diomedes' Tales of the Ascomani. The concern is that the Obsidians will try to take the Garter, though Diomedes kind of refuses to believe that can be done. However, the Rim forces still mean to be careful, meeting up with Helios at Kalaki and ghost sailing to Io, where they hope to take Fa by surprise. But everything goes awry when they meet up with Helios, or rather a man who they believe is Helios, but totally isn't. While he certainly looks like Helios, gives the correct answers to the security questions, and even passes the is even able to don the god glove and pass the DNA test, both Lysandre and Diomedes realize almost in the same moment that something is off. Diomedes suddenly grabs for the god glove and pushes up Helios's sleeve to reveal one arm attached to the other. But before he or Lysandre or anyone else can make a move, the imposter's armor shoots out a shit ton of poisonous spines and the bridge turns into a scene of carnage. Oh boy. Once the enemy has control, a call comes in from none other than Fa himself, and it is then that Lysandre realizes the Helios imposter is none other than Atlas, who isn't any of the places everyone speculated, but is, well, obviously here in the Rim and working with the Ascomani. Meanwhile, the Rim ships have gathered close around the Dustmaker to begin their ghost sail, for which their shields also, kind of conveniently, let's be real, had to be down as well. Which means that when Atlas fires on them, they're taken unawares and unprotected. And the cherry on top is that Fa's forces are actually hiding nearby and swoop in to finish them off.
Lucky Lysandre, however, has a leech that he's been wearing since he was poisoned, and it's doing its work on this new poison, too. Knowing that he has mere moments to act and wanting to make a difference, he bundles Diomedes into an escape pod and launches it from the ship. While his Gorgons want to waste Lysandre, Atlas insists they bring him along as they evacuate the Dustmaker. Along the way, they're confronted by a group of dust walkers who are about to stand down when Lysandre shouts that it's not Helios, but Atlas. Only before they can change tactics, they're taken out from behind. And when the dust clears, Lysandre realizes yet another hard truth. All this time, the squad he thought of as his Praetorians were in fact Atlas's Gorgons the entire time. Big, huge, major. Oopsies. It's soon revealed that Roan was the one who poisoned Lysander, despite the Grey's insistence that he doesn't want Lysander harmed. Atlas just didn't want Lysander going with Diomedes because while the Rim Alliance means everything to Lysander, Atlas and his Gorgons believe it's past time for the Rim to suffer for its past betrayals. Roan brings Lysander to see Atlas, who has his own eyes back but is still waiting on his arm transplant. Rather, retransplant? Either way, Atlas tells it all. He's been working on this attack for a dozen years or so. He made Fa into the Obsidian Darrow and pushed the Rim into war with the Helm Cam footage. And while Atalantia planned on being the Rim savior, Atlas is now eyeing Lysander for that job. Lysander attempts to refuse, but Atlas makes it clear that his refusal means death, and probably not a clean one at that. Feeling like this isn't much of a choice at all, Lysander closes his eyes and imagines Roan, Atalantia, and Atlas dead at his feet before relenting and agreeing to be Atlas's savior. This means that he gets to go meet Fa, though both he and Atlas have to play dress-up as Obsidians to do so. It's only once they've joined Fa's kinshield that Atlas reveals Lysander's real name, and while the Obsidians are confused about his presence, Lysander is perhaps more confused that, oh my gosh, these Obsidians are learned and well-spoken and shit.
When Fa arrives, he brings three very specific captives, embraces Atlas like a brother, and removes whatever it is that makes him talk in Ragnar Bold, revealing a soft and sensitive voice. While Atlas congratulates Fa on a job well done, he isn't too happy that his niece, Talia, is one of the captives, rather than dead, like she's supposed to be. Atlas wonders if this is Volga's doing, and clearly means for Fa to kill the girl. But Lysander stops them by claiming him marrying an ancestor of Akari might help the Rim accept him as sovereign. Once Lysander is alone with Atlas and Fa, Atlas reveals that Lysander's presence will shorten Fa's fake reign, which makes the Obsidian way happier than Lysander expected. Unfortunately, this doesn't leave enough time for Fa's forces to sack all the Galilean moons, so instead they will destroy the rest of them via bombardment. Well, except for Ganymede, that is, which Atlas pretends will be spared because Lysander spoke up. Oh, and while Fa is taking care of the other moons, Atlas will be off on his own adventure because he'll be attempting to acquire a very special bioweapon that can be assigned to any one of the 14 colors infecting that group with death. Because, you know, of course, this is a thing that exists and wasn't destroyed immediately when it was discovered. Ugh. With Lysander's fleet well on his way, Atlas casts him and some of his Praetorians as survivors of the Callicae massacre. They are welcomed back onto the Lightbringer with open arms, though Pallas, a client of Lady Bologna, clearly doesn't believe everything adds up. Oh, and she's eager to return home, but Lysander insists that they will remain in the Rim to defend the Ra's worlds. He holds himself together until he finally sees Pytha, who insists that he tell her what happened. Only Lysander doesn't want her to look at him differently, so he gives her the same tale he gave to everyone else, though he does break down at the end, knowing that despite Pytha's assurance, nothing is all right. It never was and never will be.
Yeah, fucking duh, man.
Trash excuse for a semblance of a human.
I see your opinions haven't changed.
If anything,
they've gotten worse.
Lysander, at the very beginning of this section, is up to his usual ideas about how things should work when he visits Diomedes on the bridge of the Dustmaker, thinking about how, in real life, the colors operating the ships might have personalities or wants, but at work, they're biological cogs in the machine. Jesus Christ.
Everything is the worst.
And he believes that they take a measure of comfort in their relative insignificance and perhaps pride in knowing they are an essential part of an effort so massive the core could learn from them. Lysander also admits that as vast as a Rim is, it could be run by artificial intelligence. But apparently, that would be a gross violation of our humanistic principles. Instead, billions of humans work in concert, each suited to their task, those tasks foreign and opaque to any other color, like fish to water.
This idea solidifies his belief in the Republic's cancerous effect on the harmonious system. Yeah, right. Okay. Because that worked so well and was so super harmonious that their ancestors built. And he also believes that men like Volsung Fa only exist because of Darrow. And I'm probably going to say this so many times in this episode, but I just can't with this dude.
This motherfucker.
So there are a couple of things. Nick, your voice is very different than Seth's take on the character. But as we were figuring this out, I've decided that Nero is Tony Soprano and Virginia is Meadow.
Okay. I never really watched The Sopranos, but that's okay.
So anyway, when Diomedes brings up Fa with Lysander, it's surprising that the men who knew of Thrax's specific fighting style would question whether Virginia or Dara would send someone like Fa out to harass the Rim. And speaking of Fa, what little we know of him now from the discussion, I mean, he seems like one of the more well-rounded humans in this series to me.
Yeah, there's a lot we're going to get into in this episode about him for sure.
I suppose we should give some tiny props to Lysander for immediately disabusing Diomedes of these notions. Though, as we know from our last episode where Darrow is heading, it's a bit amusing when Lysander muses, "Honestly, it would have been better to let him get back to Mars and constantly worry he'll pop out of nowhere and maul us while we're all eating our trout." I don't know what voice that was, but apparently that's Lysander now.
Diomedes agrees. It is better for an enemy to be strong and visible than to be missing and capable, especially when eating trout.
Honestly, Nick, I'm okay with the voice changing from your earlier depictions of Lysander, because he's a different person in this book than he was in Dark Age, for sure.
Yeah.
Not different. He's more of everything.
Yeah. My voice, like Lysander, has only gotten worse.
Okay. When Helios supposedly shows back up on the ship, he's got these weapons that are made out of this metal called Black Spar. And okay. I get that this Black Spar metal we're just hearing about for the first time is only found in the Kuiper Belt, but it seems like they try harder to find it considering it will apparently slide right through a pulse shield or hull. I know that the Askamani are out in the Kuiper Belt just harassing anybody from the Rim who shows up there. But also, come on now. Shouldn't you be searching for more of this shit? Anyway, next up, holy shit. Talk about, I don't want to say all the reveals, but kind of all the reveals. Mm-hmm. First, Atlas is posing as Helios. And oh my God, the whole arm thing. He just has Helios's lower arm attached to his upper arm. Ew, gross. Also, beyond that, why yes, I am very proud, as I said earlier, of this episode title, because while I thought that Rhone was a bit sus in the chapter where Lysander was woken up from his induced coma, I still did not expect, waving my hands here, any of this. It is interesting, though, that Rhone is the one who poisoned Lysander via the cloak that the Red brought back to Lysander after the Battle of Phobos. We called it the Battle for Phobos. I'm sure it would be called something else in their world, but whatever. Also worrisome, because does that then mean that the Red who handed it over to Lysander was probably also poisoned? Because I triple checked, and as far as I could tell, nobody touched it between the Red and Lysander, which means...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's dead. But also kind of fuck that dude, since he's the reason why the escape didn't work.
I guess, but also, like, I have a hard time not feeling a little bit bad for a low color who is just trying to live like the only life they've ever known. I don't know. And he thought he was getting rewarded too. And now he's probably dead from the poison on that cloak. Because again, I triple checked. I was like, did Rhone take the cloak and then hand it to Lysander? No, there was no middleman in this. Nope. So
he 100% just handed it straight to Lysander.
Yeah. Oopsies. Anyway.
Not that Lysander bothers to think about that. Instead, he simply muses, "Yeah, petty jealousy turns my stomach. I'm mad at myself for mistaking this man's patriotism for loyalty. That means Kyber isn't in his circle, though. Shot by a sniper, maybe, but not one from the Republic. He didn't want her coming on this trip."
So I'm glad that Kyber, who I actually, as much as it sucks that she's part of Lysander's team, I do think Kyber is pretty cool. But also, this is very much an aside, but I saw it posited in a Red Rising Facebook group. I can't remember which one. I'm only in two of them. So it was either Hicks and Leones or Red Rising and Beyond. But Kyber actually might have one of the psyches that was released into the wild.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I believe it, because since we met Kyber at the very beginning of this book, the few times we've seen her, she's always just way too on top of things, like more so. Like
preternaturally so.
Yes, exactly. I don't like the idea of someone on Lysander's team having a psyche, but it's still a really cool theory that I think has a good bit of meat behind it, honestly. Yeah.
I like that theory. Damn, though, when Atlas tells Lysander that Sungrave's death will be proportionate for its hundreds of years of resistance to the society, prompting Lysander to ask, do you hate your family so much? Do you hate your home so much that both have ceded any right to exist?
Supposedly, Atlas shows pain, loss, and sorrow, but also this is from Lysander's perspective, so yeah. Who knows? But supposedly Atlas shows pain, loss, and sorrow when he replies, hate? You think this is personal? You think this some petty vengeance, repayment for being given up as a hostage to Luna when I was a child? Disgusting. I am not Adrius Augustus. Sungrave will always be my home. Yet my home must die. My family tree must be torn up from its roots and burned to the last green branch. I am in agony, but these matters are not personal. These are matters of state, the highest matters of humankind. My feelings are irrelevant, as are yours.
I say it again. Damn, y'all.
Also, matters of state are the highest matters of humankind.
Yeah, fuck all the way off.
Well, I mean, it could be, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, and like a plutocracy or something. Yeah.
While Lysander lingered in captivity, Fa's forces took the garter.
When Lysander learns of this, he thinks, the world are upside down. Atlas colludes with obsidian ravagers against innocence. These hardliners celebrate massacre as patriotism. The groupthink is so heavy in the room, I worry I'll vomit.
My dude.
Like you said earlier, it is everything that he was in Dark Age, but like more so. The like inability to see his own hypocrisy. Wow.
He's fucking blind, man.
Yeah.
Clearly, because everything that happens in these chapters just shows how absolutely blind to the reality of the side that he's pushing for he is.
Yep.
And also the groupthink. Hi, yep. You're the problem. It's you.
Hi, I'm the problem. It's Lysander.
Whoever thought a Taylor Swift song would be so apt?
Oh, iconic.
Oh, man. Anyway, I have to say this because I can't help but be curious about the last time Atlas had his eyes switched out. It just makes you wonder how many other times it was Atlas doing a thing as someone else.
Right? And we're never going to know. Like,
probably not. I actually tried to think back. So he was gone from society for a long time, and I can't remember the exact timing of when he came back. I think most of anything that he might have done like this was probably off page, but that doesn't mean we haven't heard about it at all. And that's what kills me.
Atlas doesn't really give Lysander much of a choice but to join his cause. In fact, back in the core, Atalante is already working to replace Lysander.
Lysander first asks if there's a clone, but no, thankfully. Oh, thank fuck, there's not a clone.
Yeah, that's not the case. Then Atlas clarifies, oh, nothing so perverse or uncontrollable. hint. A doppelganger, a man by the name of Lepidus, chosen from Atalantia's stable of paramours. You've annoyed her, so she'll just keep your name and face. Atlas then glances at Helios's body because once Atlas was done using his bits and pieces, they just killed Helios off. Like, you know, shrug, whatever. And yes, the very strong hint, not so much hint, the very strong, like, this could be you. This apparently could be Lysander's fate as well. But also, if only.
Yeah. And then they go to meet the Gorgon Obsidians. And Lysander's just so very Lysander when he meets them, thinking he's never heard such sophisticated conversation from Obsidians.
He also notes that the Obsidians who are there call the Ascomani reptiles the same way the Moon Lords do. And the ones that Lysander converses with have to explain their disgust with their allies to him like he's a child, which is kind of hilarious. Because like, I still don't understand. And this one guy is like, A man from the wilderness who has never heard music might come upon a city and hear through a window the sound of a violin. It makes no matter if he knows the complexity of the piece or the reverence culture has for the instrument. He will stop and listen because he can recognize the rarity of beauty. These Askamani would go into the house and beat the player to death for making a racket, enslave the children, break the violin, and burn down the house. All of them. They do not seek context or assimilation, only domination. If it does not fit into their paradigm, they destroy it. The Volk would enjoy the song and listen till its end, then break the man's fingers and steal the violin to sell.
As for Fa, once he divests himself of his armor, he dons a purple kimono and sips cognac, removes whatever it is that gives him Ragnar voice, and immediately reveals his obvious cleverness.
The purple kimono. Listen, he at least has the style to be wearing a purple kimono. Honestly, and that would probably go super well with the dark hair and very pale skin that obsidians have. Honestly. He's got style.
Iconic. Iconic.
He's certainly not what Lysander expected, and I imagine we're all in those same shoes after what we saw of Fa in Dark Age.
Yeah.
He was a beast in Dark Age, but now we see this.
Also surprising to Lysander is how happy Fa is that his quote-unquote reign will last weeks instead of years. Fa explains that war isn't his passion, just his profession, and that he can't wait to retire and live out his days as a different person, apparently with Volga by his side.
This is a lot because, like, Fa thought he was going to have to be stuck out here for years.
Yeah.
And have to deal with these Askamani and these obsidians that he kind of doesn't want to be around for years. And he literally is like, oh my gosh, only 3 weeks? I don't have to deal with this for months, let alone years? Amazing. Lysander's just like, wait, what? It's like, dude, you literally saw this guy go from warlord extraordinaire to wearing a purple kimono, sipping cognac. I think they even have, like, I don't know. I'm imagining, like, Debussy is playing in the background, right? As they're sitting there, like, chilling, having these discussions. And Fa's just like, oh my God, I can take my daughter. Because that's the thing. He's getting, you know, a pension. He's getting a new face, a new name, et cetera, et cetera. But he's also getting, like, a flat in Hyperion and a Pegasus ranch, I think is what it said.
Yes,
in he's getting a Pegasus ranch. And you know that's not for him.
No.
That's absolutely for Volga. As much as I am just about the fact that Volga is with Fa,
yeah,
I am also just like, but Volga might get her Pegasus wrench.
Yeah.
Volga deserves her, well, not even just Pegasi. She wanted to be carved animal rescuer. She wanted to have her own rescue group. 501c3 Volga over here rescuing carved animals from their horrible lives.
Volga's the best.
Anyway.
Also, not only is Atlas having Fa destroy two of the three as yet untouched moons, but he himself is off to find a top secret and very nasty bioweapon.
Because while Atlas was reading his way through Octavia's vault, he discovered this bioweapon, a virus named Eidmi, that was apparently the real reason Selenius and Akari had a falling out. And Atlas tells Lysander that it's a virus with a half-life that can target any of the colors without secondary transmission to the rest. And he calls it a weapon that will mean the end of war and ensure obedience to the Morning Chair for 1,000 years. Because what planet, what color would dare raise arms ever again if they knew we could prune rabble-rousers out with a snap of our fingers?
Lysander has a difficult time embracing the reality of what Atlas is describing, because even though he knows that wars are inconvenient and expensive, atomics too destructive and radioactive to use without blowback, this is genocide in a bottle, and it wraps his heart in cold silence and squeezes.
So there's no information here whether this can only be used once or what.
Right.
But wow, I gotta say, like, have your issues with the rim as you will, but I will give them this. They treated their low colors better prior to the Rising. After the Rising, we learned in Iron Gold, they were getting rid of the obsidian, you know, god structure and letting the Reds below the surface know the truth of what they had been working for, et cetera, et cetera. I am not saying that the rim is perfect. Obviously not. but they were better before the Rising, and they were even better than they had been before the Rising after the Rising. Not Republic level of giving people true freedom and everything, but still. So the falling out between Silenius Al-Lun, Akari Al-Ra, that happened, I guess we have to assume that because it was Silenius who created this thing or had it created, whatever. So we have to assume that Akari stole it and ran off to the rim and hid it the fuck away, where very few people know about it and very few people have access to it even once they know about it. Now, should he have destroyed it? Absolutely. Okay, again, I am not giving the rim props entirely, but at the very least, they were like, no, 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 we're taking this away and hiding it away. And I mean, I have to assume that's what happened because I don't think it's actually made very clear whether they took it and hid it on purpose or whether it was hidden there on purpose in the beginning. And then Akari was like, yeah, I'm not giving you access to this anymore, Silenius. Bye forever. But I have to assume it was the former, that they took it and hid it away. Again, should have destroyed it, fucking obviously. But wow, this is a lot. I just want to, again, highlight for later episode purposes that Lysander is just shocked and disgusted by the fact that this thing exists.
Yeah, that it even exists, let alone that anybody would think about using it, which is a correct response.
Yeah.
As terrible as Lysander is, like, that is the correct response. Yeah. There should be no situation where this should ever be used.
Tiny props to Lysander here again, I guess.
Yep, right here.
Considering everything he's done so far, Lysander is more than a little surprised that Gaia is still alive when Vela will surely die in the attempt to recover this bioweapon. And all the other Ra's were killed, with the exception of Talia, who was only spared thanks to Lysander's interjection. Sorry, I see that word so infrequently, I immediately think of Schoolhouse Rock.
Yes, and Atlas and Fa's reasoning that Gaia is still kicking because what kind of monster would kill his own mother was surprising to us as well, you know, considering...
Seriously, wait, wait, what? Like, Atlas literally just said his entire family tree needs to die. That the rim needs to be just, not just beaten, but starved into subjugation. Yeah. And Lysander's like, well, why is Gaia still alive? And like, Atlas and Fa share this little look. And Fa's like, what kind of monster would kill his own mother? And I'm just like,
bruh, your kind of monster. It don't make sense.
Don't get me wrong. Gaia ain't great. He's still a space racist, just like the vast majority of people in this. Well, anybody that's not directly affiliated with the Republic, and even some that are, honestly. But really, that's the reason you're leaving this old woman alive? Because Vela, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. She has use to them because Atlas needs her to get into Orpheus, the moon that nobody knows exists. I'm pretty sure it's a moon. It could be an asteroid, but I'm pretty sure it's a moon. But they need Vela to get there. And obviously, she ain't going to survive that, which is kind of sad because she was pretty badass in Iron Gold. We haven't seen her since then. And the little girl, Talia, however they pronounce it. That's the other thing. Like, Jonathan mentioned that all the other Ra's were killed and she was one of the exceptions, but only was saved because of Lysander's interjection.
It's Thalia in Greek.
I guess, again, I'll give Lysander that because you could tell that Talia, however the fuck you want to pronounce it. Talia was spared originally. Mm-hmm. Well, because Volga. It's very clear from the conversation because Pa doesn't want to admit it, but Atlas is like, I know, bro. Atlas does not like his bro's daughter. Like, how dare you care about somebody other than me? So it's clear that that's why she was spared in the first place. But then when Atlas is like, she shouldn't have been, Fa's just like, yeah, okay, so let me just kill her now. And I guess we gotta, again, give Lysander that. She's like 8 or something. And he's like, I'll just marry her someday. And I don't believe that he means anything gross by that. But
no, it's more just like a bid to save her for sure. Right. But also, like, that's faint praise for Lysander in this scenario.
Yeah.
Way to not be quite as horrible as the other horrible people.
After that, we get kind of a time skip because there's a bunch of chapters between what happens that are not applicable to Lysander's storyline and vice versa. But when we meet back up with Lysander, we learn that him and some of the Greys, some of his Greys, not all of them, but some of them, were posed as Kalaki survivors, and honestly, pretty darn smart to pose them as survivors of that massacre, even if at least one of Lysander's allies doesn't quite trust their story. Although maybe that ally, who, as we mentioned in the summary, is Pallas, one of Julia Abalona's clients, just wants an excuse to go home. Too bad for her. Lysander easily convinces everyone else that they need to stay and oust the Obsidians from the Rim.
Only Pytha really seems to know what Lysander needs, reminding him of the silence that ate Cassius up and saying he should tell her what happened.
However, despite having told himself that he would confide in Pytha, once in her presence, Lysander realizes,
while she very well may understand why I accepted Atlas's offer, she will never look at me the same way ever again. Not with the protective love of an older sister. Lysander will cease to exist. She will look at me only as her sovereign. In time, I will look at her only as my captain, and it will be as if our lives on the Archimedes never happened. To preserve that, I lie to her. I tell her the tale I told Cicero and Pallas and my officers.
Boy, I bet this will totally all turn out fine.
Yeah.
Really, the truth of the matter is he did not have a choice. It was either die a very horrible death, possibly having the knowledge of his visage used by Atalantia to put a pretender by her side. But also, man, I don't know. It's hard because, like, as much as I hate Lysander right now, Atalantia is really fucking horrible and Atlas is even worse. So there's this, like, small part of me that's like, he's like the less worst of the three of them at this moment in time.
Two things about that, though. One, he could have sacrificed himself and killed Atlas. Literally, Atlas is like, you could take that scalpel and kill me right now because I don't have fucking arms and there's not much I'm going to be able to do. But, you know, my Gorgons are going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
But he could have sacrificed himself instead of taking this deal. Like, that is a viable option. And he would have taken out Atlas, which would have basically put a huge, huge wrench in all these plans that were going on. The idea that he has no other option, I don't buy. It might not be a great option, but it is an option. Secondly, every single one of his fucking decisions that we have seen him make since the beginning has led him to this. And so he doesn't get to, like, cop out because, oh no, I'm trapped in an impossible decision now. There were so many other decisions that he made that he could have made differently and for the right side that would have not led him to this point. So fuck Lysander is what I'm trying to say.
So it's hard because, like, even if he had killed Atlas in that moment, I would posit that there's never any stopping the sacking of the Rim by the Obsidian and the Ascomani. We can call Ba a style icon as much as we want, but if he knows that what he's doing is not going to garner him the rewards that he expects, would he continue doing what he's doing or would he walk away and just kind of let them to themselves? I don't know.
It's impossible to take it out of... You could also argue that you could be potentially saving millions of lives by killing Atlas, who is responsible for the death of millions of lives. But I take your point, and I see what you mean.
Listen, I don't like it. I don't like making that point, okay? I don't like it at all.
I get you.
Really, at all. All of these Lysander chapters, we start with him feeling so great about himself. He's on the way to the Rim, helping his bud Diomedes. They're running their virtual reality fights and doing a good job and stuff. And it all seems like it's going according to plan. And then it's not. And we knew in Dark Age that Fa was part of Atlas's entourage, essentially. I guess, like, as much as we knew that Fa was doing that, I did not expect it to take this twist, this turn, because Atlas literally destroys two of the three Rim armadas in one fell swoop. We know that they have the Garter now too, So he's got that hook on the stomach of the rim as well. He's so fucking awful. We knew he was awful, but also something about maybe the body horror of him taking Helios's eyes and arm and having it transplanted onto him and then having a green hack into Helios's brain to get the codes they need to get into Sungrave, etc. Maybe it's the body horror thing, but oh my God, I just do not like, hate it so much. Nope.
Good villain though.
Honestly, yes. Better than stupid little whiny Abominadrius. Let's be real. Better than fucking throwing her weight around nonsense Atalantia. In a way, even better than Octavia, because Octavia was just like all about control, whereas Atlas has this many-pronged plan. So I'll give it that. Very good villain. Very good villain.
With that, now it's time for In Memoriam of
literally everyone on the Dustmaker and other rim ships at Kalkite,
including Zagria, the Dustmaker's Kitamonus, but most notably Dido Ausaud, sentenced to death by Atlas for treason against the society, as if he has any fucking room to talk.
Helios Alux, the austere co-counsel of the Rim, mutilated by Atlas, his body parts used for nefarious purposes, and Sungrave's defense codes extracted from his brain before he was sent to the void via lethal injection.
Innumerable unnamed golds, raw soldiers and low colors who perished in their attempt to protect Io from the invading Obsidians and Eskimani.
And Lysander's trust in his Praetorians, because in addition to the ones who were with him on the Dustmaker, there are apparently 221 more hidden among his forces on the Lightbringer.
I just have to say, Nick, you missed our, I can't remember if it was the last episode or the one before that. I think it was the prior one. So it was either 83 or 84, but I think it was 84, where Jonathan was like, he just kept pressing the fact that like we weren't talking about the important deaths. And that is why Jonathan got to announce the In Memoriam deaths of the innumerable unnamed people. All right. As we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our heroes, to your patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with fellow host Jonathan, and returned Nick! After a long absence, Nick. Don't forget that you can always hit us up at Sogs and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sogsandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have. Our next episode, titled The Ruin of Ra, will cover Darrow's POV from Chapter 46 through Chapter 56 in Part 3 of Lightbringer. Please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment for early access to our recordings.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.